The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in progress.
The quarterback, two receivers lined up to the left, one to the right. There's a flanker lined up to the left behind the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
He gives the ball. No, he doesn't. He doesn't get the ball. The receiver goes all the way over there to the left. Once the quarterback has the ball, he fakes to the left. No, he fakes to the right. He doesn't think. He thinks about faking. He pretends to fake.
PFW in progress with Fred Kirsch.
It's not like you could use a shower. Oh, listen. You can think what you want about my personal hygiene, but please don't waste any water. That's bad policy.
Paul Perillo.
So that's what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.
And Andy. And Andy?
There, girl, you're seeing.
Seeing? I see a lot of girls. I see a lot of guys, too.
I think that's sexy. You ever been with a guy and a girl at the same time?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times. The other night, I was with my mama and Coach Klein at the same time.
Andy Hart.
And I like Vicky, and she likes me back. And she showed me her boobies, and I like them too.
Eric Scalavino.
I want you to think about all those mean people. They're going to be your tackling fuel.
Tackling fuel.
We're going to use them to play football.
Tackling fuel.
For now, anyway.
Ooh, I'm a football player.
Coach, I'd like to tackle him right now.
Yes.
PFW in progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Oh, no! We suck again!
All right, welcome to PFW in progress. It is Thursday here at Gillette Stadium, July 3rd. We're getting ready for the 4th of July holiday, and it's an official half day here at Gillette Stadium, but I think a lot of people decided to make it a whole day.
I can't blame them, really.
You know, archery,
not you, Freddie.
It's archery.
Not you.
Archery practice upstairs.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
We march through.
Yep.
And we're here.
But we're here to do a show for you to kick off
Eric
your 4th of July. If you're not from the United States, you had Canada Day last Tuesday. And if you're from the rest of the world, the hell with you.
No, I'm only
kidding. I don't
our
know.
Listeners are from the rest of the world.
I don't know if France has Bastille Day.
That's 11 days from now.
11
14th.
Days from now. You're very up on the French holidays.
14th.
Yeah. Okay. And then I don't know what the rest of the world.
You set the countdown going.
Yeah. Well, I know in the Back Bay they have a nice Bastille Day celebration. They closed down Marlboro Street, I believe, by the French Embassy.
Really?
And it's a nice little event. Yeah.
Didn't know that, Fred.
Yeah. You should check it out. Now, maybe they don't do it anymore since 9/11. I don't know. That's how long ago I lived around there. So, anyway, Paul's completely disinterested.
He's trying to figure out what the connection between eliminating Bastille Day festivities in Boston and
well, it's one of those open events in the street that you have to have security and
as opposed to anything else that you have to have security
well,
for.
I don't know.
They haven't eliminated.
I don't know. You never know.
Did you get my?
Yeah, I did.
Okay.
You know, it has the embassy is right there. So I don't know.
I didn't know they did that.
Yeah. Yeah. Food.
Vive la Boston.
Food, music.
Neither does Fred ever.
Well, you know about all the ones in the North End, all the events they have there. The
Italian events?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are all
the street.
Those are all like religious things. Well,
I know, but it's
festivals.
Things.
Yeah,
yeah they have the
festivals.
Food and the carnival.
It's a food festival.
Yeah, yeah.
I used to go to those all the time.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You could drink when you were like 14.
Yeah. I used to go to those, sure.
Get like a can of beer and walk around with it.
Sure.
No one gave you any problem.
Sure.
That was the good thing about growing up in an Italian household, though. Is like you got exposed to
drinking
that.
Drinking at a young age?
Well, yeah. You got exposed to that stuff early on. Like that wasn't like it wasn't taboo. It was like if you're going to have the stuff, you have it under our supervision. You have a little bit of that. You have a little bit of
right.
wine. You have a little bit of the beer.
Right.
So you get to know early on whether or not you even like it,
yeah.
first of all. And
it's
then,
not a big deal.
It's not a big deal.
These kids, they get to college, and it's the first.
It's the only time they've ever.
You know,
yeah.
they go nuts.
Right.
And especially, like they say in Japan, it's really epidemic because it's so strict and rigid up until that point, and then they just freak out.
Really?
Yeah. They binge. It's not good. Everything
not good.
In moderation.
That's right.
Who said that? Socrates, right?
Did he?
I think he did.
Socrates?
Yeah. So someone tuning into this show is like, what the hell are they talking about?
It's July 3rd.
They
There's nothing
going
on.
Broke all-time record for getting off track.
All right. Webradio at patriots.com
is
the email address. 508-298-0398 is the ACE ticket hotline. 855-PASS-500 is the way to get to us toll-free.
We got the Wimbledon going on, Fred.
Wimbledon going on. Bouchard just got into the women's final.
Francois?
She's the hot one from Canada. Everyone loves her.
I've not seen her yet.
She's the new one.
that's on the stage. And
hotter than Sharapova?
Oh, I don't like Sharapova.
Really?
Nah. Never. Never
doesn't do it for you?
Nah, never interested
missing
me.
Missing certain something for Fred.
What about you?
Pow!
Well.
He likes Serena.
No, she's a basket case these days.
What do you think happened the other day to her?
Oh, she just didn't want to play. That was all an act, in my opinion. What?
I think she was either high or drunk.
Oh, no. I think
she had painkillers mixed with something and had a reaction.
Nah.
I don't think that was faked.
I do.
Why not just retire? She's Serena Williams.
Because she doesn't want to upset her sister.
So instead she did that?
Did you see the look on her sister while they were going over her on the sideline?
That's why I don't think she was sick. I think it was I agree with you on the look that Venus gave her. Like, yeah.
Right.
Really?
Right.
I mean, it certainly wasn't. She wasn't sick.
I don't think she
can. I think she had a reaction to a painkiller.
See, I think she just doesn't want to go up to her older sister. I don't feel like playing anymore. Yeah. And so she put on this whole act.
She is such a baby. Though,
isn't
she?
A diva.
Like every time she loses.
There's some incident. You know? Yep. It's like.
It's not that someone else is better.
It's like Brandon Lloyd with the catches. He can't just miss a ball. It's got to be like this whole thing. She can't like lose a match. It's got
to
be like.
I probably just came off as being very disrespectful to Serena, but that was the most unbelievably disrespectful thing. At least Serena Williams is one of the greatest tennis players of all time.
I know that.
And you compare him to the ultimate Jag diva.
I'm just saying,
what piece of crap, Brandon Lloyd.
I'm just saying that the failures are of epic proportion.
My God,
she is. She's one of the greatest, if not the greatest, women's tennis player ever. But still, she's a diva.
You know? Oh yeah, you know? Big time.
And maybe that's what makes her so great. I don't know. McEnroe was a diva.
Yeah,
you know.
He's not, though, the greatest of all time.
No, but he was great.
He was great. Yeah, he was great in his day.
And, we're here to talk Patriots. And
I don't really have much to
There's
add.
Really nothing.
I've been working on, and I just did a bunch of them because we're going to be scattering next week with vacations and whatnot. But just trying to break down the roster a little bit. Nothing too fancy. What I found, though, Freddie, each position I put together what I think my locks are. You know, just locks. So, in other words, there's no scenario that I see where so-and-so doesn't make the roster. So, there were some guys that didn't necessarily get to be locks that I feel probably will be on the team. Not as many of those locks as you think, you know?
Have you done which position?
I did every position.
Okay.
I posted quarterback yesterday and running back today.
Yeah.
There'll be a different one posted every day through the end of next week.
Okay.
But I did them all. And like offensive line, I put Ryan Wendell and Dan Conley in the bubble category.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think both of those guys will probably be on the team. And I think it's probably going to end up being status quo. We've talked about the offensive line a little bit. I don't know if you were here, Fred, but talking about the young guys and the three draft picks, the guys that were here last year, guys like Josh Klein, and some other guys that were up. Braxton Cave, I think, was here a little bit. Chris Barker was on the roster, I think, all of last year. So there are some guys that have been around, but I still think it's going to end up being the incumbents will return to their spots. But not a lock.
Yeah. So how many?
I had two locks at safety.
How many if you take?
McCourty.
Two.
McCourty and Harmon?
Yeah.
If you take where the Patriots ended last year with their 53-man roster, subtract the guys who are no longer here because they either left through free agency or just weren't re-signed, how many open spots are there to fill? If you assume that everyone
who is returning is keeping
is
their
returning
job.
Is here, how many open spots are there on this roster? Do you know?
I think that's an impossible
question.
That's
really hard to say.
I don't think you can do what you said.
Really?
Assume everybody is like, who's everybody?
Like everybody that's under contract at the end of...
Okay, so you're counting like Jagarrett Davis and Kenoris Davis and Josh Klein and guys that were on... They were on the roster. Justin Green?
Yeah. No, I'm just... Yes.
None. I mean, there's 53 guys that are back.
Oh, really? No one left?
I mean...
Yeah, but...
Some people left, but you have enough guys that were on the roster coupled with the guys that were on IR.
Okay.
I'm counting... I'm going to count Vince. I'm going to count Vollmer.
Yeah,
I'm going to count Gronkowski.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
If you're going to count everybody that was on the roster, then there are no spots left.
Okay.
But obviously, Justin Green is probably a long shot to make the roster,
right.
Even though he closed last year on it. Kenoris Davis, Jagarrett Davis.
Yep.
Those are the kind of guys that filled out the roster. Interesting, Joe Valano Silver Salinga and Chris Jones. Three guys that played pretty prominent roles last year. I don't think there's room for all three of them.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And might not be room for two of them.
Yeah.
Depending on how it all shakes out.
Well, yeah, because, I mean, Kelly and Wilfork take, you know, you can assume they're going to take two of those spots.
And you can throw easily in the absolute lock category.
Yeah, right.
So there's three guys that played prominent roles last year.
At least one of them
probably
won't be
on there.
Three guys
that weren't on the roster to close last year that are going to be there this year.
And you can't, and you can't stash any of them, I don't think, on practice squad because I think they've used up. They exceeded their limit last year of regular season game appearances.
Yeah, I don't know about Salinga, but I think you're right.
So
I didn't even check to see that.
So I think you have to assume that at least one of them, possibly two of them, aren't going to be
Milano
there.
Milano and Jones played the entire year.
Do you think there's any chance easily being a rookie if he comes back? And I know that he was at the last practice, but he's just not right. We know he's not going to start the season that they put him on IR.
I think there's a zero, unless he gets hurt between now and in the season. 0%.
No chance. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it would be almost a year now.
I'd be disheartened if they shelved him for a year.
I think they have designs in him. I'd be really disheartened, you know, to use your word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would. But to me, that would be he would have to have suffered another injury.
Okay.
And that would be disheartening as well.
What do you think? So are you saying that because you think he's going to be ready week one?
Yeah, I have no doubt.
Okay.
He got hurt in September.
I know.
I just don't think – I mean, I know that one of the favorite things that we do is we pick and choose when we use Belichick to our advantage. And I'm going to use Belichick to my advantage in this argument. I just don't think the ACL injury is what it once was. I mean, you can have microfracture and stuff like that. That's different. When you're dealing with multiple, I think that's a little bit different too. This is a guy. I think this is a young guy who already came back from a torn ACL on the other knee once, and he showed that he could perform. There might be a little bit of an adjustment period. There might be a little bit of a difference that we won't know because we haven't watched the guy. But September to the following September, I see no reason why he shouldn't be at or near 100% to open the season.
Okay,
I mean 100%,
especially if you're not counting on
not
him,
like you know. Welker.
Yeah, Welker, you know, but Welker got hurt in January.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
You know, there's a big difference. Right. That's four more months.
Right.
And especially if you're not counting on him to be an every down interior tackle, you know, like Vince or Kelly. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's spot duty, if he's rotational, if sometimes he moves out to the edge, whatever, you know, you're not expecting him to play 30 snaps a game, 40 snaps a game, you know? So initially, maybe, you know, then maybe eventually as he develops, maybe you think, oh, well, he's got to start. But
now the fact that all of those guys are dealing with major injuries is a little bit of a concern. Wilfork, Kelly, and Easley.
Yeah.
But like Eric said, it might offer you the opportunity to sort of spot them a little bit and keep them a little bit fresher because they won't be able to play 60, 70 plays.
Well, they have to do something because – there was just no rotation, especially in the ends there.
And then you have, on the inside, I think you have the potential for depth with the other guys, the younger guys that we talked about that got a lot of experience last year. And that's what a lot of Patriots fans talked about was sort of the blessing in disguise of getting guys like Volano and Jones. They're going to be better players for what they went through last year.
And like you said, assuming now they are able to make the team.
You know, whoever makes it. Yeah. The guy who does the most to develop. Ends up making the team.
Yeah,
and I see a lot of people picked up on what we were talking about. I think it was 2 weeks ago about this could be the best defense since the Super Bowl winning years.
Yeah.
Mike Reese was writing about it, and
the potential exists for them to be better than they've been since 2004.
Right. So
easily.
All right. Again, WembRadio@patriots.com is the email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Lots of people emailing in, despite this being the day before the 4th of July, and it's archery practice at most offices.
And the 4th of July, as our
credit Matt Smith,
as our good friend No Socks, who just did his
just
normal
dashed out
in and out
Indy 500
Thanksgiving and flip flops. 4th of July.
Yeah, is that what you think?
Thanksgiving and flip flops.
The only difference is instead of indoor, you're eating outdoor.
Yeah, and that's the greatest. Mm. That makes it the best.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, no pressure.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, I love Christmas, but there's some pressure with Christmas. You know,
sure.
you're running around with family and gifts and whatnot. There's no pressure. The weather is always good, although
usually
we're dealing with a potential hurricane tomorrow. Right. And what could be better than barbecue?
Right.
You know, you sit out, you have a couple of beers, you know, in my case, a couple dozen.
Right.
See where the night
Take
goes.
Take your pants off.
See where the night goes. Right. You know, maybe put a lampshade on your head.
Right. Sounds good.
Oh, I got to drive up to New Hampshire, and my wife is working, so I'll be driving.
Oh.
So you can be drinking.
So I won't be drinking, which is really unfortunate.
You kids be quiet back there. I'm stopping this car.
I got a hangover.
All right.
I was trying to get it so my father picked me up, but he has to get my aunt. Auntie Fina has to come with us.
Auntie Fina?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Auntie Fina's like 94. God bless her.
Yeah. Her full name is Quadrafina? No?
Oh, boy.
No? Aquafina? No? All right, let's go.
Sarah Josephina.
Unless you have anything else to put on the table, why don't we just go to the phones and emails and see what people want to talk about.
Have at it.
All right. Let's go to Noel from Denver first. Hey, Noel.
Hey, guys. Good morning. How are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I called late the other day and missed you. I thought you were on till 3 again, but I missed you. I missed out. But, you know, let me go back to that conversation about Brady not being performing as well. That's what I'd like to ask you guys. Maybe we should ask Giselle if he still performs.
Oh, see now. I didn't know if we weren't going to work blue
hours,
here.
48 hours you waited for that?
Well, that's okay. Hey, guys, what can I say? Anyhow, you know, I'm a lover of the Patriots, but I also believe that Brady has just not had as much to work with as he should have. And I'd just like to get your take on
one
thing.
I agree with that.
What about all these guys talking about? But who else do you feel in the league could have done what he did last year with the people that he had surrounding him?
I think there's a few, but
all of the good quarterbacks.
Yeah,
Peyton Manning.
But somebody made
Aaron Rodgers.
I forget who it was,
Drew Brees.
Somebody had a good comparison today. They spread it out on Twitter. They took Deion Branch's rookie numbers and compared them to Dobson's.
Yeah.
And Dobson's was as good, if not better.
Yeah. Totally different game.
Totally different game?
Yes.
With football, and they weren't playing football back then?
Not like they do now. Not throwing the ball every play the way they do now.
Well, I don't know.
In 2002, they were a running team.
Yeah. Brady's attempts were...
I've seen these kinds of things. Everybody is, like, twisting themselves in pencils to try to find out how great Aaron Dobson and Kendrell Tompkins really were last year.
All you have
year.
To do is watch
Just
the
watch
games.
The game.
Yeah.
You know what there was?
Stats can be misleading.
To go back to the beginning of the show, there was a lot of Brandon Lloyd with Aaron Dobson and Kendrell Tompkins last year.
Yeah.
Everything was an event.
Yeah.
To coin your phrase that I think really aptly described it.
Yep.
Everything was an event that involved those two guys last year.
Yeah, I think
they made plays. They had moments.
I think you have to look at attempts. How many times did the Patriots throw in 2013
that's
as compared to 2002?
More than
I would
did
say.
Back
how
then.
Many times did those guys have opportunities to have balls thrown their way and not catch them?
Right.
Again, your big thing with Brandon Lloyd, 70
right.
some odd catches blew Deion Branch away.
Right.
Now it's
but
it's,
how many times they throw the ball to Deion Branch?
Right.
It's also too bad that the way they keep stats, they don't account for double clutches, because then Tompkins would have had probably over 100.
Clean catch. Well, I don't really. I mean, if every time you double catch but you end up catching, I really don't care. But, you know, it's when you drop them or get it knocked away from you.
Who did Joe Montana have when he was with the Chiefs that first year? Anybody?
Well, Paul would be the only one that would know that.
I don't remember.
I don't remember anybody. Was that
Lake Dawson, maybe? Wesley Davis? Wendell. No, Wendell did. No, was it Wendell?
No, you're for AFC West. You should know the answer to that.
I don't remember all the guys. I mean, you know, that's a really bad time for me. That was the Patriots' worst era, in my opinion. So it's probably the time that I knew the least about the league. Because we were going 1-15 and 2-14 every year. I didn't know the personnel as well as I had in other times.
Well, I hope the hurricane don't hit you up there in New England, guys. And have a good 4th of July and a safe one with you and your families. And thanks for taking my call. Appreciate it.
Okay, you
thanks,
two know Noel from Denver calling in. Let's get to some of the emails at webradio@patriots.com. Josh is calling in or writing in from Houston, although he calls himself Haynes in Houston. That's his last name.
He likes the alliteration.
Yeah, Haynes in Houston. On Tuesday's show, there was a lot of talk about the 2014 Patriots defense potentially being our best since 2003-04. Looking at the historical data on Pro Football Reference, you can see that there was a significant defensive jump between 2002 and 2003.
Oh, yes.
For example, points allowed per game dropped from 22, which was 17th in the league, to 15, which was first in the NFL in 2003.
That was a truly wretched, wretched defense, the 2002 defense.
How about the personnel? Here were some of the major player notes for 2003. Ted Washington replaced Anthony Pleasant. Ty Warren contributed to line depth. Roosevelt Colvin was knocked out with a hip injury in week two. Veteran Teddy Bruschi had a big jump in productivity over 2002. The defensive backs, Asante Samuel, Eugene Wilson, contributed in all 16 games. Free agents Rodney Harrison and Tyrone Poole started all 16 games. And stars from Super Bowl 36 jettisoned after 2002 included Lawyer Malloy, Otis Smith, to Bucky Jones, and Terrell Buckley. Two observations, according to Haynes. The Patriots' 2013 defense, 21 points allowed, was essentially on par with the 2012 defense, 22 points allowed. And the most significant personnel change both times came in the defensive backfield, see Darrell Revis and Brandon Browner. So in light of the changes made in 2003, do you think the team has done enough with their personnel in 2014 to make the kind of defensive leap that we're all hoping for? So I include in changes guys coming back from IR. So a change to the defense from 13 to 14 is Wilfork, Kelly,
yeah.
Mayo, although Mayo got hurt kind of late.
Was it like week six?
No. Yeah,
it was
only
like,
that's yeah. true.
It was only like a week or two.
A little
after
before
Vince.
The mid-season.
Yeah,
a little
before
mid-season.
Mayo was New Orleans. All three of those guys missed the balance of the season.
So those
they missed
to
more
me,
than half of the year.
Those to me are good, if they stay healthy, are going to be changes from 13 to 14. And I think that's significant. And then you throw in Revis, you throw in Browner, you throw in Easley maybe, you know, wait and see. Those are significant changes. And so the answer to that is yes.
Yeah. I think they'll be better, but I don't know if they're going to make that significant a leap like they did in 03.
And the other part of it is, again, you know, this works on the other side of it. I do think that the game is a little bit different. I think it's harder to have the kind of defense, you know, with the way the game is played now that they did back then.
Well,
and
true.
I also would say the 2004 defense was light years better than 2003, even though statistically they may not have been number one in the – I don't have the numbers in front of me. They may not have been number one in the league in
points allowed.
Allowed.
Well, but Eric, you're probably right. The leap won't be as great from 02 to 03, but it doesn't need to be. They weren't 17th in the league in points allowed last year.
No, but
they allowed more points.
Yeah, they weren't a great
That's
defense.
That's part of my point.
Oh, yeah.
They weren't a great defense.
No, not at all.
They weren't a dominating defense. They weren't a takeover-a-game defense.
No.
Like those 03-04 teams were takeover-a-game defenses. Like,
once you got the lead, it was over.
Once you got the lead, it was over. So
that 04 team, you could be up 3-0 in the game.
Yeah, it was like it's like Boris Becker in tennis.
Right.
It You're was just over. Not going to break his serve.
No.
No.
And I don't...
Brett's got tennis on the brain today.
Well, I mean, it's on all the televisions right now, so... I think the defense is in very much a similar... situation as the offense. If its best player, in this case Revis,
great point,
doesn't perform the way he should or can't play or gets injured, the defense is going to be mediocre. If he does play and perform the way we hope and think, they could be a potentially great defense.
They could be great. If Revis is right, they could be great.
Right.
And I think that's a great analogy with Gronk.
Yep.
It's the same thing.
Yep.
Good job, Eric.
Thanks, Paul. I try.
It's nice that Andy's not here and you can actually contribute.
Brady from Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. Thanks for a great work you all do. I've been a listener since 06 and couldn't imagine going about my week without you. Yes, my real name is Brady, and no, I was not named after Tom unless my parents were able to predict what would happen 7 years into the future. I enjoyed the Joe Namath talk from Tuesday's show because Namath and I share something in common, the same hometown of Beaver Falls. And Andy's not here for the immature comment. So I hated walking past the shrine of him in my high school filled with all his Jets memorabilia. Fred, I have a fun fact for you about Namath that has a Patriot twist to it.
It's just a fun fact.
Beaver Falls' biggest high school rival are the Aliquippa Quips, hometown of Darrell Revis and Ty Law.
Uh-huh.
Mike Ditka and Jonathan Baldwin also call Aliquippa home. Now
Ditka.
A short game.
Okay.
I mean, football is huge out there.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's...
Western
Zolak's from out that
Western
way.
Pennsylvania and Ohio. Yeah, they have that big all-star game.
Yep. Short game. You have to select one player to cut, one that will not meet expectations, and one that will exceed expectations this coming season.
One we will cut. one who will fall short, and one who will
now,
exceed.
Now, has he given us groups?
Yep.
Oh,
three
okay.
at a time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Klein, Cannon, and Stork. Who do you cut? Who will be better than you thought, and who will not be as good as you thought he would be?
Klein's going to exceed.
Yeah, I will cut Cannon.
Ooh. Of all those three, I guess you have to, right?
I will cut Cannon, I think.
But, you know, it's not a cut.
Yeah.
Yeah, he said cut.
He said, didn't he say?
I thought one that will not exceed, one that will exceed.
And the third one
is
cut.
Oh, and then you cut. You're right.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yep. So I'd cut Cannon.
Yep.
Who did you say would exceed?
I'm going to say Klein exceeds and Stork.
And Stork falls short?
Stork falls short and Cannon gets cut.
Okay. Yeah, all right. I'll go with that.
Based on those three.
Yeah.
McCurdy, Dennard, and Browner.
McCurdy, Dennard, Browner.
Oh, boy.
None of those three are getting cut.
Yeah. Not cutting. I'm not cutting any of those.
Yeah,
guys.
This is a bad one because.
You can't cut any
yeah.
of those.
Yeah.
I can't cut any of those
yeah.
three. But I would say that Browner is going to
fall short
of expectations. Not because I think he can't play, but I think
the expectations
are way out of
yeah.
whack.
Yeah. And I'll go with Harmon to exceed expectations. Only
Harmon
because,
is not in the group.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, I'm sorry.
McCurdy, Dennard.
I'm sorry, Dennard.
I would say, wow.
Oh, boy.
I'd say Dennard exceeds.
I would say Dennard exceeds, too,
yeah.
because I think the least is expected
right.
of
him.
Right. Right.
I think that the expectations from McCurdy and Browner are through the roof.
Right.
I mean, I've seen people refer to McCurdy as one of the best handful of safeties in football.
Right.
I don't think he's that kind of player.
Ridley, Vereen, and Devlin.
Ridley, Vereen, and Devlin.
Whoa, man. See, again, I don't think any one of those guys is
cut. I think Devlin gets cut. I think Ridley exceeds and Vereen doesn't exceed.
I would flip-flop
Ridley
Vereen
and
Ridley, but if you have to have one, right. I don't think I agree with Eric. I don't think any of those three are getting cut.
Interesting fact today that was tweeted out by someone that when you think about it, it really is not a big deal. But, you know, with all of Ridley's problems, he's like a few hundred yards away from breaking the top 10 rusher in Patriots franchise history. But you look at Patriots franchise history, when they were breaking those records in the 70s, it was by committee. There was no one guy. And then Curtis Martin was only here for a few years, you know. So who was the back that, you know, for a long time was that great?
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
Yeah, they don't have one guy for a long time. It would have been Curtis Martin.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Nance and...
just imagine,
you know,
what,
Burton back in the day, and
just,
you know, they
just
were...
imagine if Curtis Martin had been here for his entire career.
Oh,
what yeah. they? Wow, man.
Yeah. Let's see, Jones, Mayo, and Ninkovich.
In order for a game, I mean, I love games.
Yeah,
you have to have somebody who's
but
possibly...
you have to give you no. at least a guy that has a sniff of a chance
right.
of getting.
And
cut.
The next one is Brady, Gronkowski, and Revis.
Oh, all right, forget this game.
Yeah, we're gonna move on. We're going
to
move on.
I love the games. I love the effort. I just think that the groupings need to have a little bit more thought
yeah.
put to them.
Mm. Yeah,
he's probably doing it on purpose, trying to see if we could pick somebody who's a lock.
Yeah,
he
didn't represent Beaver Falls very well.
No.
Yeah. So, let's go to Jack from South Carolina. I've seen a lot of depth chart projections recently, and I keep seeing everyone have Collins as a strong side linebacker. Mayo on the weak side and Hightower in the middle.
That would flip-flop
yeah.
Hightower and Mayo based
right.
on what
yeah.
I saw in the spring.
Easily drafted in the first round, he is my prototypical 4-3 under a 3 technique. The Sam backer is usually the most physical as he needs to set the strong side D gap on run plays. He also generally blitzes most of the three. The weak side backer is usually the lighter, more explosive athlete who gets the most opportunities to make plays. The Mike backer is a combination of both, as he needs to take on the lead blockers in the run game while also having the athleticism coverage ability to drop to the deep middle in cover two. With that being said, wouldn't it make more sense to have Hightower on the strong side? He could play closest to the line of scrimmage and get more opportunities to blitz, which he has made public he would like to do. Mayo would play the middle. Well, I think that's what we said.
Mayo's
probably
going
to
happen. Based on the spring, Mayo's playing the middle.
Mm.
Yeah. The other two, I think you can make an argument, yeah, that Hightower would be more suited to the strong side because of his size. But, I mean, I think that they showed last year that they could do either. I you know, when Hightower was in the middle, I think Collins played the strong side at times, too. So.
Yeah, and covered tight ends
yeah,
pretty
and
well.
And he showed that he could cover a little bit down the stretch. Collins is going to be an interesting guy to watch because
yeah.
if he can be you know, if he could sort of tap into that potential and show that what he did late last year at times was what he's going to be, That's a versatile playmaker that you have all of a sudden.
All right. Tate from Arizona writes in. I'm originally from Maine.
That's Tate.
Originally from Maine, your show's been a great find. I enjoy the honest and varied opinions. Defense, one, I am very excited about the corners we picked up. Two, I believe Easley will make an impact and take pressure off of Will Fork. And three, Collins seems hungry and will be improved. Okay, I can go with all three.
I agree with all three of those.
Mm-hmm.
This stinks. This is the worst show.
Offense, one, as long as we have two of the following three pass catchers consistently on the field, we will be productive and win.
Here's where he gets mad.
Here's where I can jump
Two
in.
Of these three have to be on Gronk, Amendola, and Edelman. As long as two of those three.
Oh, okay.
But if two of them are Amendola and Edelman, aren't you where you were last year?
Yes.
That's
the problem.
Has to be one of
Gronk has to be one of the two.
Exactly. Two, if we had an inside runner like Dylan and a legitimate deep threat like Moss, we would dominate the NFL. Okay.
Well, but
okay. So with a lot of teams,
exactly.
If we could just add J.J. Watt up front, and you know, then we would have the best player at every single position.
Yeah.
But also, you don't really find running backs like that anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's not that as Paul likes to say. Running backs. What is it you say? How is it that you put it?
Dime a dozen.
Yeah.
Hopefully I gave you something to discuss and debate. I look forward to your shows every week. By the way, we are going to win the Super Bowl.
Okay.
Okay.
But I agree with your point, Freddie, on that receiver thing. As long as Gronk is one of them, then it can be Amendola or Edelman. It doesn't have to be both. But if it's not Gronk, then you're back to what you had last year.
Unless you can say, well, Amendola was never healthy last year.
So what?
Yeah, he's not Gronk, even at his healthiest.
He was healthy opening day, and he caught a million passes, and their offense wasn't very good.
Anthony in Long Island's on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Anthony.
Hey.
Hey.
I was just wanting to talk about Brady's decline that you guys were talking about last time.
Okay.
I kind of disagree with you guys about him being as mentally sharp as he was. I don't think his decline was his physical decline. It was more mental mistakes, I think.
Okay.
Well, that's a differing opinion.
Yeah.
Yep. So you think that, you know, if Eric thinks that it's a physical thing in the pocket, you're saying maybe it's a mental thing in the pocket.
Yeah, because of the offensive line, I don't think he trusts his offensive line as he has in the past. And his receivers, I don't think he locks into certain receivers other than going through his reads, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was just wondering, I heard reports about like Kimbrel Tompkins and Josh Boyce bulking up. Do you guys have any opinion on that?
Where'd you hear the report?
I think Boyce looks bigger. I hadn't really noticed in Tompkins as much, but I'm sure that they've put on some good weight, as they say, you know, when they learn nutrition.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if...
Have a lot of shakes.
Right. Well, when we saw that.
Yes, we did.
We saw all the shakes, all the shake combinations.
I wish we had one of those.
But I do agree. I think I like that.
Yeah, that sounds good right now. Nice
shake
cold
station.
Shake.
I think Boyce, to me, looked a little bit bigger, and you guys know I like Boyce.
Yeah. Will from Lemoore, California. I just had a quick question on why the Pats have played the Giants week four every preseason for the last 10 years.
Because both teams want to do it.
Yeah, it's convenient. It's not. This isn't one of those things where it's a quirk of the schedulers. But they optioned to do that, both teams.
I think, and Belichick always says this is not the case, but I think teams have a say in their preseason schedules.
Oh, of course they do.
Belichick says he doesn't.
Well, maybe he doesn't.
No, teams don't. Yeah. Belichick says that they don't have a say in it, that it's the league.
Yeah.
And I think that they do. I think they try to get them mostly interconference as close as they can. You don't see a lot of cross-country trips.
I know that's true because when Parcells was here, he had a very good relationship with the Packers.
Mm-hmm. Ron Wolf.
Ron Wolf, and we always played them in the preseason.
Always wanted to play them there because – it was one of the places that truly still had an environment in August at Lambeau.
Yep.
And I remember him being quoted about that. Maybe they've changed things, but I do think that it's not a coincidence that you play the Giants every – and even before this run of the last one.
Yeah. Right.
We've always played the Giants in preseason.
Yep.
That can't be a coincidence.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, especially the last preseason game because teams don't – you know, they're more focused on the first game of the regular season. It's a short trip for both teams. It's It's convenient. It's not, you know, you're not going to San Francisco making a cross-country trip and everything.
And they've done that in the past. They've had
preseason games
in Oakland and San Francisco in past years. That just, to me, doesn't make any sense at all.
No.
Wasn't Bledsoe's first game in San Diego, the preseason game?
I couldn't tell you that. I'm not really up on the preseason.
Bledsoe, though. Didn't you remember his first game?
Yeah, Buffalo.
I'm pretty sure the first time he took the field was in San Diego.
We got schwacked, like 41-17, something.
Where's
like that.
Our media guy?
Do we have but I do
guy?
Remember his first touchdown pass on a 4th and inches. They threw the ball to Ben Coates for a touchdown.
Did you save that pair of
like
underwear?
It's like a 35, 40-yard touchdown. It was a short pass that Coates ran for a touchdown.
Okay.
Do we have a media guy in there?
I do remember Bledsoe playing at San Francisco in the preseason 1 year.
Jeez.
I do remember that.
He even remembers preseason games.
No, I just got finished telling you that I don't remember the preseason games. I just happen to remember that they played at San Francisco because I remember thinking to myself, this is stupid. Why are they making a cross-country trip in the preseason?
Cody writes in, I think a lot of Patriots fans need to accept that Brady is declining, even if it's at a slow rate. The evidence is there, and there's no avoiding it. Now, I'm not writing to focus on Brady. He's been talked about enough. It's time to focus on Manning's decline. No one talks about Manning declining because he just had a great year.
I talked about it at length on Tuesday.
Said this is the year.
But Fred has predicted him to fall off the cliff.
But if you put Manning in the Patriots offense last year, I believe that he would have put out the same or worse numbers than Brady.
I agree. Same thing.
So, no, this is the year for Manning's decline.
Bledsoe's first year was 93, correct? First game ever at San Diego. 13-7 loss.
I had no recollection of that whatsoever.
Really? You wiped that out of your mind? All the losses?
No, preseason. No, yeah. I told you the first game Bledsoe's game, they got killed by Buffalo at Buffalo. Yeah. I don't wipe the losses out.
Did you also know this is kind of strange that they Oh, okay. That's why. I was going to say they had 3 games at home, but that's not true. The second game was in Toronto. The second preseason game that year was
against
in
Pittsburgh?
Toronto, Cleveland.
See? And no recollection of the preseason.
And then 2 home games, Green Bay, to Fred's point, and Kansas City. They beat Green Bay that year.
No memories of those at all.
I don't remember the Toronto game, though. That's weird. But, yeah, San Diego sticks out in my mind because I remember that's the first game he played.
I think they might have played one in Montreal against Pittsburgh in 1 year, but I don't remember.
Bledsoe's game. 1990, they played Pittsburgh at Montreal.
Okay. And then you guys had a game in Mexico City 1 year, right, Freddie? That you went to Mexico City.
Yeah, that was.
I was sick that game.
Yeah. That was 98.
You were learning nutrition at the NFL level. You were sick.
Yeah, I was sick for that game.
1998, they played the Dallas Cowboys in Mexico City.
Yep.
That was the year before I arrived.
Keith writes in from Tampa. I saw Mike Reese wrote that Ridley could be cut this preseason training camp. I would be shocked if we cut him. With Vereen's lack of durability and really not much experience behind him, but I was wondering what you guys thought. And P.S. the Pats iPhone app has a lot of issues. I had to go to the old school and listen to the laptop today because the app wouldn't work. The app is going to have a refresh with iOS 7 pretty soon. So there are a lot of bugs in the app these days, but that's going to get refreshed. So thank you for your patience, Keith.
Yeah, I saw Mike put him in the near lock category. I have him in my lock category. And for the reasons why the emailer just said, there's no other traditional lead back, you know, workhorse type ball carrier on the roster. You know, you're going to turn it over to Brandon Bolden or Steven Houston, an undrafted rookie? I don't want Vereen getting 15, 20 carries a game.
The Finch kid from Oklahoma?
Yeah, I'm the homer, I know, but I still hold out hope for Steven Ridley. I think he's the best back on the roster today, and I hope he can overcome his fumbling.
I hope so, too.
When you say the best back, do you mean in terms of just a ball carrier?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Then I would agree with you.
Yeah. Why, what else is there?
Vereen is the best back.
Not overall.
Vereen is
talent.
The best back on the roster to me.
Yeah.
He's the best combination of everything.
Oh, see, now, I'm just talking about ball carrying.
Because I don't think there's much difference between Vereen running the ball from scrimmage and Ridley.
Oh, I do.
I just think that Ridley is more suited to running the ball in between the tackles. You can't have a guy of Vereen's injury history and stature running the ball 300 times.
Yeah.
That wouldn't work. But in terms of giving the ball to a guy to make a run, I would just assume have it be Vereen in a one-carry situation as anything else.
Yeah, well,
I think that in terms of being a lead ball carrier, Ridley's the only option on the roster right now. I don't see any way he gets cut.
Let's go to Justin in Virginia on the A's Ticket Hotline. Hey, Justin.
Hey, guys. I have a rant and a game.
A rant and a game. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand why people, like, hate on Danny Amendola so much. Because to me, he's like the wide receiver, Eric, well, like, he's basically the same as Talib to me, just a wide receiver. And he just got hurt earlier than Talib. Because Talib and Danny Amendola are both injury prone. And, like, they both miss a lot of time. And they both play hurt. And they're both puddles when they're hurt. So I don't understand why.
Well, I would disagree with the last part. I think Talib played at a higher level when he was hurt than Amendola did. Other than that, I agree with everything you said.
Remember when we were, like, having him to cover Charles Clay, though, and we just threw him into the zone?
Okay, but what about the rest of the year?
Like, what did he do after that interception, though?
What interception?
Remember, like, his last interception?
No. Refresh my memory.
His last
I mean, to me, he only had one bad game last year. That was against Cleveland. Josh Gordon absolutely destroyed Talib against Cleveland. Remember that game?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Other than that, I didn't notice Talib being part of the problem in any other game, and he was hurt for half the season.
I didn't think he was part of the problem, but I didn't really think Danny Amendola was.
Danny Amendola was part of the problem. He was not a viable option offensively for, I would say, 10 of the 12 games he played. He was really not a part of the equation offensively, culminating with a complete no-show in the playoffs.
Right, and you could say that's because of injury, but...
And then he didn't have anything done to fix it, so I don't know.
And, you know, the thing is, it's, you know, and I get what you're saying, Justin. You know, your opening statement was you don't understand why people hate on Amendola the way they do. And I think it's more just it's people venting about the expectations that some had for him when he came in, and they're saying, well, why did you have those expectations when you know he's injury prone?
Right.
And this is who he is, and this is who he was last year, so why are we surprised? And so I think that's what it is. I think Amendola was a warrior. He probably shouldn't have played last year. He probably should have sat out. But, but maybe in his own mind, he's like, there's no way I'm going to come to this team and not play, knowing that that's what they think of
that's
me.
That's possible.
You know,
it's
so,
possible.
You know, I think he was a warrior in that regard, but he didn't help the offense that much.
He didn't. That's too bad.
You know, and it is too bad. Can he, if he's 100% healthy? I think he's a good receiver. But that's always been the issue with him. It's the health. We know he's athletic. We know he's fast. We know he can catch. He's a little bit bigger than Welker was. All those things. But he was one thing that Welker wasn't, and that's injury prone.
Yeah. But, like, I just hate how, like, everyone was saying, resign to leave, when he wanted, like, a lot more money than, like...
Well, that was before people thought they could get Revis.
Yeah, we needed a corner.
If they didn't get Revis,
right,
this team would be markedly worse than it was last year.
We'd be talking about fingers crossed for Alfonso Dennard.
Right.
You know?
That's why people wanted to resign to leave, and I don't think he signed an outrageous contract at all in Denver. It's one of those contracts that's just like all the other NFL contracts. It's fake, and they can get out anytime they want.
Yeah,
but if you had Revis, I'll take Revis over Talib, you know, 7 days a week and twice on Sunday. Or whatever they say, 6 days a week and twice on Sunday.
Well, I'm going to move on to my game, though.
Okay, your game. Yep.
I'm ready.
All right, this is hardest for the home team. Rank them 1, 2, and 3, 1 being the hardest, 3 being easiest. Patriots at Vikings, Broncos at Rams, and Colts at Cleveland Brown.
Which game is hardest?
For the home team?
Yeah, rank them 1, 2, and 3, 1 being the hardest, and 3 being the easiest.
Okay,
Vikings
are
the
Patriots?
Easiest, the Browns are the second, and the Rams would be the hardest.
And by the way, these are all, like, real games, too.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I would
assume so, yeah.
Out of those three, I would say the Rams would be the most difficult, and the Browns would be second, and the Vikings would be the easiest.
All right. Pats at Jets, Colts at Texans, Broncos at Raiders.
The easiest would be the Raiders. The second would be the Texans, and the hardest would be the Jets.
All right, Patriots at
Colts. Are we going to do this for 16 games?
Oh, no, it's only four.
Oh, okay. What's the next one?
Patriots at Colts. Colts at Broncos. Broncos at Patriots.
Broncos would be the toughest, the Patriots would be the second toughest, and the Colts would be the easiest.
All right, Patriots at Chargers.
I hope you don't ask me what my answers are in about 5 minutes, because I'll have absolutely no recollection.
Yeah, and they'll be different, probably.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Patriots at Chargers, Colts at Giants, Broncos at Chiefs.
Giants easiest, Chiefs second, Chiefs the, Chargers hardest.
Chargers the hardest.
All right, thank you, guys.
Okay, so Justin's setting up his betting plays for the 2014 season. What was that?
I was waiting for him to have some sort of valuations and saying, well, this schedule will be the hardest one based on what you guys are saying. This because those are the games that you know, maybe were in the crosshairs.
That was kind of an odd one.
Yeah.
All right, food's here and wasn't brought to us by anyone except us. So we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, a lot more of your emails, your calls are coming in. We appreciate it. It's the day before the 4th of July, and we'll be right back.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call star NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie, 3 Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company. One that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy. One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Like what you've heard so far? You'll love it even more when you read it in Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or log on to pfwonline.com.
All right, welcome back to PFW in Progress. Day before 4th of July, that means it's July 3rd here at Gillette Stadium. And just eating food. That was a short break. So apologize.
You finished most of your pie, though.
No, I didn't.
No?
No.
Not even half.
Oh.
I'll have to piece away at it as we go along. Email webradio@patriots.com, 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. We're talking about a lot of things. Patriots defense, Patriots offense, guys who might get cut, guys who might not get cut, all kinds of things. So let's go to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Chris from Boston's on the line right now. Hey, Chris.
Hi, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
What's up, Chris?
Hey, so I'm calling because I'm trying to figure out something about Aaron Dobson and kind of, I don't know if you can call it hype, but kind of the buzz around him when people talk about who to look for as a rising star next season and kind of the future of the Patriots receiving corps. I personally, I know he had his 500 yards or whatever last year. He wasn't a complete disappointment. He had the injuries he was dealing with. But to me, I don't think he passed the sniff test. I obviously, everyone saw him drop a lot of passes. That was more of a problem early on. He got a little better with that. But aside from that, I just, when he had the ball in his hands, I didn't see him do a lot with it. I thought guys like Josh Boyce last year and Kendrell Tompkins even though you guys aren't big on him recently, I thought they were more exciting to watch. And I didn't see Dobson have any clutch plays. I didn't see him. I guess he had his one big play. What was that game? The game.
Was it Carolina?
That we were, exactly.
Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
So yeah, I'm just wondering kind of what people see in him in the future, aside from his college career.
The fact that he's big,
I think
big receiver.
What it comes down to,
6'3"?
Yeah, what it comes down to for Dobson is whether or not you think. See, I would tend to agree with your description, Chris, but I think the people that are high on him think that last year was a good building block. And, you know, he had some.
Also on Jeffrey, right?
He had. Oh, God, if I hear another one of those people. But he had some success. He made some plays. And as you said, he wasn't a bust. He was okay. He had a solid rookie year. And people think that that's the start of something much bigger. I tend to agree with you, Chris. I think what you saw last year is probably about what we can expect from him. He might make statistically a little bit of a jump if he's healthy enough. But I don't think that he is a 1,500-yard receiver, 14-touchdown kind of guy. I don't think that that's what he is. And I kind of agree the way Chris said. He didn't pass the sniff test to me. His stats said something that I don't think his play said.
Well, the problem with it is they needed him to be better than he was. And
right.
That's not fair. You know, Gronk, if Gronk was out there, he wouldn't have needed to have been better than he was.
True.
You know, and they were left with, oh, my God, this guy has to perform or we have nothing, you know, except Edelman.
And I guess I see when you compare him to the rest of our receivers, the big thing is height. He's 6'3". And then on top of that, he probably has the best speed of anyone. Aside from Boyce, who's small, he has the best speed to get separation. But it was a matter of, like I said, when the ball was in his hands, I just didn't see him.
Yeah,
I didn't like the cuts he was making. I didn't see him do anything after the catch.
I think right now, again, that could improve because right now the mental part is focused on just catching the ball, not what I'm going
right.
to do after.
He's also not healthy
yeah.
at the moment.
Yeah, well, right now, no.
So that's a hindrance because, as we've talked about before, the year two jump, we maybe talk about it a little too much, but it's talked about for a reason, and any guy who doesn't have the ability to go through a normal offseason, especially the first normal offseason that they have a chance to do, that's a hindrance to their development. And he's going to be lucky to be able to catch up during training camp with all that he's missed so far.
And I also think, Fred, in some of the things, and I want to defend, I'm going to defend him and then I'm going to criticize him. I'll defend him first. I'll say, because he didn't make any special plays, or, you know, Kembrell Tompkins had the big catch against New Orleans, which was memorable. It was a huge play to win the game. I'll take what Dobson did for the most part in terms of, I thought there was a point about halfway through the year when he started making catches look the way they normally look. You know, when I remember when Deion Branch would catch a routine 12-yard out on 3rd and 7 and just catch the ball and tip-tap on the sideline and go out of bounds.
You felt confident, you know, that he was going to make
the catch. And I said, hey, that looked like an NFL play. And I thought Dobson had a fair amount of those. I never thought Tompkins had any of those that I just said, wow, that's the way it's supposed to look. He always seemed to be landing on his butt.
Yeah.
He would be jumping in the air and not landing on his feet properly.
Or dropping the ball.
Like you said, double clutching the ball. They both had problems with drops, but I thought Dobson sort of lessened as the season went on. I thought he did a better job of that. He's going to have to prove he could stay healthy. Now, on the negative side, I want to sort of pick at something you said, Fred. You know, they needed him, you said, and it was almost like a defense of Dobson. It wasn't fair for him. Well, if they didn't need him as much as they did, you can probably cut his numbers in half. He wouldn't have compiled anywhere near the stats that he did. They needed him, and that was still the best he could do, you know, statistically. I don't think if Gronk is healthy, to use your thing, he's not getting that amount of opportunities.
And that's fine.
No, I'm just saying he's – so let's not say that it wasn't fair because he wasn't ready for this and that. Either he can play or he can't play. Well, he had opportunities last year that most rookie receivers don't get.
Right.
That's part of what I was talking about with Deion Branch. Deion Branch didn't get that amount of chance to play like that.
But usually it takes a year or two for receivers in this league to really...
The ones that aren't good enough.
Well, come on.
I'm just that's a huge cliche that crawls up my butt. But wide receivers can't do it right away, except for the good ones.
Well, they don't get the big numbers right away.
Except for the good ones.
Yeah.
They do.
Not all of them.
There's nothing that's absolute at any position.
Yeah. It's a tough position. Let's see. Tony writes in, some pundits appear to believe Gronk and Easley will be able to contribute right away. Even if true, apart from Adrian Peterson, everyone lacks their old explosiveness that first year post-ACL. Example, Welker, among others. Aren't we expecting too much if we think the pre-ACL Gronk will be present this season or that Easley will have his college explosiveness this year? Shouldn't we temper our expectations this year on those two?
Well, as Paul mentioned earlier, and Easley's college explosiveness came after he suffered an ACL. So, yeah, and he's young enough, I think you could maybe say that, you know, and especially at that position, he might be able to do something.
But who says that we're not expecting, an adjustment period? I'm not expecting Gronkowski to be pre-ACL Gronkowski in week one. And I'm certainly not expecting a kid to come in with all he has to learn and play the way he did as a college player coming off an ACL.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely, there will be a period that they need to get comfortable with their body and what the knee can do and stuff. But I think that they can be physically 100%. I think Welker was physically 100% very early on that first year coming off the ACL, mm-hmm. but he didn't play to the level that he did for a while. You know, I remember talking to Welker late in training camp. It was one day in the bubble, and he said that he felt better than he ever had physically. And I believed him, and I believed that he was telling the truth. Now, he didn't play at that level because I think it's hard to do that. But I see Gronk doesn't have to be pre-ACL Gronk right away to be as productive. I mean, he wasn't pre-ACL Gronk last year, even though –
It had nothing to do with an ACL, right?
He wasn't playing with one hand, really. He wasn't the same as he was before the injuries last year, and he was utterly dominant. And I think that he can do that again, even if he's not quite 100% healthy.
Julian from California is calling in. Hey, Julian.
Hey, you guys. How you doing? I really appreciate you taking me in right now. And I just got one quick question. What are the odds? I don't know if you guys already answered this or not. I just tuned in. But what are the odds that we either bring in Jermichael Finley or Dustin Keller
you know, either before or during training camp. I was just really wondering because, you know, we're limited at tight end right now, and I don't know if there is anybody else we're really going to bring in. What are the odds we bring in both of them?
So, both of them or either one of them?
Either one. Either one or both. I mean, I was hearing talks about both from my friends or...
I would doubt that they would bring in both of those guys, but I think either one is an option at some point during the preseason. Probably later in the preseason, because given you know what they've gone through in injuries and the fact that they're veterans, I think they would probably want to play as little as possible in the preseason. But I think either one is an option.
I think everyone here thought that Keller would be on the roster by now, and we still think that there's a chance. But what are they waiting for if they do intend to sign him? What do you think? What do you think they're waiting for?
Well, I think it might. I think it, like I just said, I think it could be the player not wanting to participate in preseason. They're veterans. Yeah. They're coming off some serious
Keller
injuries.
Doesn't strike me as that type of guy.
No, but they might. He might not want to go through the rigors of it early on.
I would think that it'd be the opposite. He'd want to know where he's at. He needs the time. You know.
Yeah.
And I would think as a team, if you're going to think about signing a guy like that, it's almost mandatory. Like, we'll sign you, but you have to be here because we need to know where you're at. We can't wait and hold a spot open for you.
Yeah, or what I'm nervous about is that, you know, somebody else will sign him, like, you know, the New York Giants or somebody who needs the tight end.
Right. Well, no one has. So, you know, it's interesting. You know, and that could be – everybody knows he's still damaged goods, or that he has an unspoken agreement with, or unwritten agreement with some team that, you know, he's just going to execute at some point.
And I'm not really worried about. I'm really not worried about a guy who's going to be a backup at best. I'm worried about Gronk.
Yeah, clearly there's no fear on the Patriots' part of him signing elsewhere. Because if there was some urgency, they would sign him. I still think there's a chance for Keller. I am not and not have never been in favor of signing Finley, but I don't know the answer, Fred, and I sort of agree with you. I understand Eric's point about veterans, but these two guys wouldn't fall into that category. They need to show the teams that are going to sign them that they're healthy and physically ready for it.
Right.
And I don't think that they're looking at it as an opportunity. Now, Tony Gonzalez?
Right. That's different.
That would be different if he would be able to be, you know, wooed out of retirement.
He's a blue chipper. You know what you're going to get out of him.
But he's physically, he's fine.
Right.
So you don't have to worry about it. I don't need to see him out here.
Right. Right.
I know what he can do.
Right.
I know the guy can fall out of bed and catch passes. He did it last year for Atlanta without doing any of the stuff in training camp. I could see them trying to woo him out of retirement. You know, I know that some people have been sort of throwing that around a little bit lately in Patriots Nation.
I just think that the Patriots know what Dustin Keller can do when he's healthy. He's certainly killed them enough times in the past. They know what he can do when he's able to get on the field.
Yeah, but I agree with Fred. They don't know he's healthy.
Right, and
I think they'd need him out there.
Well, but see, I think that might be why they're waiting. They're waiting for him to be healthy enough to bring him out here.
That's the only thing I can think of.
Yeah. Mike in Florida writes
time.
In.
Yeah.
Thanks, by the way, Julian from California for the email. Mike says, "Yo, Paulie. Not trying to argue with you, but would like to respond to your Namath contentions only because I usually respect and agree with your opinions, and since it's the offseason and we both have time to kill, you said that you don't care about statistics. Eventually, some stat must be used to make a case for greatness besides just the eyeball test. Otherwise, you are using the Jeff George argument. If we take away Namath's pathetic passer rating...
What's the Jeff George argument?
That he looks good as a quarterback throwing the ball.
He never looked good.
If we take away Namath's pathetic passer rating and ridiculous amount of interceptions, only 17 QBs in history have a worse rating, and focus on the bottom line of winning, he is still below average. 4 winning seasons out of 13 in 2 playoff appearances, career playoff record of 2-1, overall record 62-63. He did not dominate his era, as you stated. He was average to below average in all stats except yards per pass. He turned the ball over.
That's a pretty big one, by the way.
At a very high rate, even for his era. As for throwing for 4,000 yards, big deal. Total yards is one of the weakest stats ever. He threw the second most passes in the league that year, had 250 yards more than the next guy. Being the first to do something means nothing. It means nothing.
So he was a full game better than the next guy.
You also used an excuse that if he was not injured, if he took it seriously, if he reaches potential, come on, P-Man, I expect better for you. Yes, he had exceptional skills, which makes his pathetic play even worse. And he goes on. By the way, just so you know, this isn't a Jets think. I think Chad Pennington is one of the most underrated QBs ever. So it's not just a Jets bash. Here's the point.
So it's just
there is a stat that you can look at from Namath and say, okay, now I get what they're talking about. It's the yards per game. It's those games where he was throwing for 300 and 400 yards when no one else was.
Listen, statistically, if you're going to use statistics, then there is no argument. That's fine. If you're just going strictly, the email is right. The passer rating is terrible. The interceptions outweighed the touchdowns. His record was mediocre. And I think in a lot of ways, he will go down as wasted talent.
Yeah,
I think he's wasted talent. Sure. I agree with all of that. I just think that if you watched him play and watched how he transcended the game at the time that he played, and again, I'm saying this sort of disingenuously because I didn't get to do that. A lot of the stuff that I'm basing it on is really what, like, my father talked about and what people that I respect when I was growing up talked about with the guy. So you're probably right. Maybe I have this guy placed a little bit on a pedestal that he doesn't deserve to be on. But if we're going strictly on stats, okay, and yet we can't say that Tom Brady's in decline without getting yelled at, based on his stats last year, right? I mean, Eric on Tuesday was trying to make an argument that Brady has been in decline, and he was getting crucified for it,
By me.
Paulie let him have it with a good one.
I think
because Paulie was entertaining,
I think if
doesn't,
he took a consensus,
doesn't mean he was right.
I think most of our emailers agreed with Eric.
Oh, well, yeah, except for the fact that you didn't read those.
Yeah, you didn't read the part where they said they were agreeing with me. The guy wrote in like three times afterwards.
Get to the part where I agreed with Eric.
I think most of them did.
I read that one. But my point is, I don't think that Brady's declining because of the stats last year. I think there's extenuating circumstances that put those stats there, much like I think there probably was. Again, I didn't watch Namath play live, although my first Patriots game ever was a Monday night game here in 1976 that the Patriots absolutely destroyed Namath and the Jets. I didn't get to see him play live, you know, in the 60s when he was really, really good. And I just think that to just look at his stats and say, well, he's a bum. That's a Dale Arnold opinion.
Right.
It's like a petulant Boston.
No.
You know, he's from New York and he's overblown because he's from New York.
I do remember a Monday night football game Namath was playing in, and I don't know if they were playing the Raiders or the Rams, but there was a point where Namath got knocked down, and the defensive lineman that hit him went behind and put his arms under his shoulders, on his armpits, and dragged him back 10 years and dumped him on the ground. I mean, now that would be like, you'd be thrown out of the game for that. You know, but it was one of the more humiliating things. And this is Namath's one of his last years with the Jets before he went out west, and his knees were a mess and everything, and it was really humiliating.
And my point, that the one thing I'll defend myself on the email, I wasn't saying that he would have been great if not for the injuries. I'm saying imagine how much greater he could have been if not for the injuries.
Yeah,
that's not the same thing.
And
certainly, I think that he was his own worst enemy in terms of his off field.
And I might be clouded too in my judgment because
the Jets were one of your favorite teams.
That's the team that was on TV where I lived, and so I watched a lot of games. I was young. I was pre-10.
You were living
in
New Jersey, weren't you?
Yeah. So I saw.
So that was your home team.
If not all of his games, and he just amazed me as a kid, like the way he would just put the ball up, and it was just fun to watch.
I just look at a guy like Terry Bradshaw. Okay, Terry Bradshaw won 4 Super Bowls. And I just didn't think that he was all that great. I mean, he was great. I'm not saying he was a stiff, but
he also had a great defense. He had great skill
talent,
around him.
Great
on
talent
offense.
All around him. And I just think that, you're throwing these bombs in Super Bowls, and Lynn Swann and John Stallworth are making these ridiculous catches routinely.
Right.
And it's like, oh, there's that Bradshaw again with another Super Bowl title. And I just look at him and I say, it's like I always feel like right now, Elway is my guy. You always ask me.
Right.
I never saw a guy do more for his team than Elway did. He's always been my top quarterback.
Yep.
Well, statistically, that ain't stuff.
I agree with you, Paul.
This is not even close.
Right.
Elway can't compare with Peyton Manning and Tom Brady.
Right.
Statistically.
Nope.
If I were starting a team.
I don't think Joe Montana compared to Elway.
No.
But I'm sorry. If you look at the stats, it's Montana, it's Manning, it's Brady, it's Rodgers. These guys blow guys like Elway and Marino out of the water.
To me, he's the best quarterback I've
Elway?
Ever seen. Elway?
Well-rounded. I think he might be, you know? He might be.
He was a great passer.
We talk about doing more with less. We talk about Brady
doing more with less
better than,
right. than anybody that I've ever seen.
He rarely got hurt.
One of his
flaws early, especially early, is he didn't have much touch. I mean, the guy would be 5 yards away, and he tried to
He didn't
to
have
take
much touch when he was 38 either.
No. He got better.
I know, but.
You know, the little floaters and stuff. Everything was a freaking bullet.
We always like to make fun of, like, Bledsoe for not being, you know, all those 5 yard little toss passes.
Guys would catch him at their knees.
Yeah. Right. Elway was just the opposite. He was like firing them 100 miles an hour. It's like, hey, John, I'm right here.
Exactly. I think he got better at that.
But if I had to pick a all star, all time squad, Elway would be my quarterback.
I think mine would be Brady.
I'm really surprised to hear you say that.
Yeah.
I'd be curious in about 15 years when you're not working here anymore and you have another favorite. You will. I'm sure you'll have a different favorite team then. I'd be curious to see what your answer
would
be.
I think Brady, you know. Serena writes in.
Brady is certainly in the discussion. I mean, if you're going statistically, it's hard to top Brady.
Woodland Hills, California is where Serena's from. After listening to Tuesday's show this week, I agree with Paul and Eric that Brady did miss more wide-open receivers last season than he had in previous seasons. I was just wondering if he may be lost or he might have lost some of his focus because he had all new receivers and rookies and no one he could initially count on at the beginning of the season
to
catch the ball.
I think that's probably part of it.
It seems like by the time he had built up rapport with his receivers, he was already off his game and couldn't get into a good groove. What do you guys think?
Yeah, it's possible factor, but I'm talking mostly about when a guy is absolutely wide open in the middle of the field, which happened quite a bit last year, and he doesn't hit him. That has nothing to do with not being, fully on the same page with a guy. That's just a physical error. That's all it is.
I think that would be more mental, wouldn't you?
No, physical. He couldn't get the ball where it was supposed to be.
Oh, yeah.
Mental means he doesn't throw to the guy.
Are you saying his arm strength isn't as good as
We saw some of that too, though, Fred. Where it went? What was the game where he had two guys going wide open down the field? Was it Denver? And he chose to throw to somebody who was covered on like a short route. He had two wide open guys downfield. That's a mental error. He chooses to go to not
right
two of the open guys. When there's a guy open and he throws to them and doesn't make the throw, that's a physical error.
Right. But
I do think that the mental aspect was a big part of it last year. And I think it's human nature. How could it not be?
That's my point, yeah.
I mean, how could you feel the same about throwing to three rookies as you did about throwing to Wes Welker?
So if the receiver situation improves and Brady improves, then he's not in decline. Has he reversed that?
Can I actually see that happen first?
Oh, no, but if that happens, has he reversed his decline?
So you've never seen, like, okay, so Philip Rivers last year wasn't better than he was the previous 2 years?
Well, yeah, but
Philip Rivers wasn't in a decline and then bounced back with a great year last year?
Then it's not decline.
Okay.
Well, yes, it is.
And he just had a bad year.
Like three in a row?
Yeah, he's had more than one bad year, Fred. We've been seeing
We're talking about Aaron Rodgers, right?
No, I said Philip Rivers.
Philip Rivers.
Oh, Rivers.
Philip Rivers had two or three really bad years in a row. He was in decline. He bounced back last year with a good year. But I mean,
but see, are you saying that a bad year is always the result of a decline?
When you get to be in your mid-30s and you're consistently a little worse than you were the previous year?
Yes.
Well, yeah, but
that's natural.
But having a bad year doesn't necessarily mean you're in decline.
Having
correct?
One bad year, no, doesn't necessarily
no,
mean
No, I wouldn't say Eli Manning is in decline.
Right.
He's not played as well as he had earlier in his career.
Right.
I actually think he's getting back to the level where he always should have
okay.
been.
Okay.
Well.
But that's another story.
He's settling to
where he always should have been.
Right. He was playing
exactly.
over his
he was
head.
Playing over right. his head.
For like 5 years?
Well, we're kidding around, Paul.
A little bit.
With
not
Eli
entirely.
Manning.
I don't have time to. I don't have time to have multiple arguments about the same topic.
I think there's extenuating.
If anyone can do it, Paul, you can.
I could do it.
I think there's.
I was a little disappointed. I just saw the standings. They just said the standings for that tournament that I'm coaching Will in.
Yeah.
And I found out the two teams that we beat are both 0-2. So I'm not quite as excited about it.
Boy, he's even tough on his own kids' team.
Well, I was really jacked up. We had a good win last night. I thought the team that we played was markedly better than the team we played in the first game.
Well, that's in the playoffs. That's how it works.
It's not a playoff. It's a tournament.
It's a tournament. It's a round robin.
We're trying to get to the yes.
Oh, okay.
We're trying to get to
the
play-in.
Sort of like the World Cup.
There's 2 8-team
divisions.
Are you
in the group of death?
Well, I don't know. We'll find out.
They do play Argentina.
If I heard one more person say that, I think I was going to scream, by the way. You know, they got through the so-called group of death. Oh, that's great. I mean, we got absolutely dominated in 3 out of the 4 games, and some people thought we got outplayed in the fourth game. I didn't see the Portugal game, so I can't.
Oh, they absolutely got outplayed.
Yeah, I didn't see
Portugal.
That one. They got dominated in the other 3 games.
Yeah.
I mean, they got outshot like 22-7 against Ghana.
Yeah.
It wasn't even, you know, they just were hanging on. And then Germany and Belgium were just men against boys.
Let's go to David in L.A. Hey, David.
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good.
Good. Hey, I got 2 topics to talk about, and I want to see what you guys have to say about it. First one being, Dustin Cutler reminds me of last year's John Abraham, and I feel like he's going to be probably going to end up going to a different team, and I wanted to see what you guys have to say about that.
I think the difference is his health. I understand what your point is, and it looked like we're going to have Abraham, and then all of a sudden it just never happened. But I think this is a situation where it's strictly about his health. I think Fred hit the nail on the head. I think they probably are waiting to see if he's going to be physically ready to go once you get to training camp. I can't think of any other reason why they'd be waiting.
Okay.
But we don't have the answer for
you. Abraham,
I thought it was going to happen right at the start of June.
The Abraham thing.
Here we are in July.
The reports we got from Abraham was the difference of
a million or so dollars,
which to me is silly, but it was a money thing. That's not what I'm getting the impression Keller
is about.
I haven't
seen Keller really involved with any other teams.
Right.
You know, I think this is strictly,
Abraham was going on visits.
I think this is strictly about health.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I remember the one time that he went on a visit and you stuck by your thing.
Right.
Like, so now can we get nervous now? And you're like, no, it's a done deal.
Right.
That was one of our best ever.
Right.
The second point was I feel Tom Brady has started a decline, but I also feel that.
You got a bad connection, Emily.
That are you reading?
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
No, Fred's just being Fred.
All right. So, yeah, Tom Brady is starting to decline, but I feel that he's still a top five quarterback.
Unlike
the guys at Around the League podcast.
I don't know what your podcast's talking about, but we've been making that exact.
I think we all agree with
we've
you.
We've been making that exact same argument for months now.
Yeah. Well,
I'm just agreeing with you guys because a lot of people gave you guys.
Yeah,
you know, heat over at the last show, and I kind of want to give you guys my point of view and basically have your back on this topic.
Well, thank you.
Whose back do you have? You don't have
me
mine.
And Paul's,
right?
Yeah,
you know, the rational ones on the show.
Yeah, don't group me in with the negatives.
No, no.
The objective, unbiased ones.
You know what I hate being called?
What?
Negative.
Negative.
That like
there's a point. There was a time that I called sort of, with Fred,
hating and negative.
Ironical.
Yeah.
And Fred had told me, you know what, don't worry about what everybody else says. Just know that Tom is going to produce, take us back to the AFC Championship, and we're going to be laughing at everybody else's faces.
I might have said that a little quicker than you did, but I do recall saying that. All right, thanks, Dave, for the call.
You're a bad guy.
Tony says that Elway had a very good group of wide receivers, the three amigos. Let me tell you something. They were pedestrian.
Hold on for a second. You were talking about Bouchard being good looking.
I'm looking at. They have them side by side in the photos.
Yeah. She's cute.
Maybe that's a bad photo of Bouchard.
No, Bouchard is the
hot
one.
Is she really tall?
I don't know how tall each one.
They're probably about 6 feet, right?
Probably.
After they had the highlights of the Bouchard match, and they walked off the court, and one of them was really tall.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one who won. And She didn't look all that.
No, Bouchard. All that Bouchard is. She's the one that's going to be marketed heavily.
Kvitova's not bad though.
Yeah, I thought Kvitova
from
was pretty hot.
From Canada.
She was hot, as Jeff Ha would say.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Haven't taken any shots at Jeff
Bay. Yeah, right.
Pete and Augusta
that's
Maine.
That's your guy, though.
He is my guy.
Happy 4th to all of you, he says.
Likewise.
Thank you. Pick out a situation from last year that stood out for you where the play calling left you baffled. I totally agree that Brady's accuracy was off last year. I agree that we all decline in health as we get older, but disagree that we all do it at the same time. There can be quite a gap from one person to the next.
You don't all do it at the same time.
I don't think anyone ever said that.
Well, you were kind of definitive, and there is no
doubt.
As you get older. But I didn't say when.
Some guys could start that when they're 28.
Yeah. And some don't start until they're 35.
Right.
Yeah.
But as you get older, you decline. That's
and,
all.
And
that's
some
all,
may not start until they're 40.
Yeah, Fred. And I didn't say that there was a certain time when it started.
It's not a fact that he has declined.
Right.
It's a fact that as you get older, you're not quite as good as you used to be. That's a fact.
Well, define old. I mean, he was better at 28 than he was at 22. That's a fact.
Yeah, because he went into his prime. Yeah.
So he was older and he was better.
I don't think physically he was better, but that's a fact.
Of course he was.
Eventually, Fred, as you get older, eventually everything fails. That's why we die.
But you're doing black and white when it doesn't call for a black and white discussion.
I agree with that.
Right?
That part of it, I
eventually,
agree.
Yes, everybody will decline. That's right. But it's at different stages.
Yes, I didn't say it was at the same stage.
So
he keeps
you cannot
how slight he thinks the decline is.
I know.
Right?
So, people are making it sound like he's not a 1-in-15 quarterback.
Let me say this then. If I agree with you that he has a slight decline, I will then say that decline had nothing to do with anything that they didn't do last year in, you know, their lack of success. You know, 12-4. But, you know, not going past the Broncos. That decline had nothing to do with it. And so it's not even worth talking about.
You don't think he could have played better?
Given what he had around him, no.
That is the most tacit acknowledgement of.
So you're saying that if Peyton Manning was under center opposite, he would have done better than Brady in that game?
I think Peyton Manning is in decline, too. I've said that many
times. Okay, Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, I think he could have done better.
I don't think so. You know? Not with the same cast of characters.
Okay.
I do. I think they're younger, and him and maybe throw in Breeze.
Colin Kaepernick could have done better. I think Andrew Luck might have been able to do better. I think if you could have had a guy physically that could have run around and improvised and made some plays.
Well, yeah, you're calling different plays, and you're suiting your offense now to that guy.
But you just make a blanket statement that, no, Brady didn't play that well, but with that cast of characters, it was impossible to play any better.
I think
than that.
If there is a decline,
I mean, against
it's
that
not
same
even worth talking about.
But against that same defense, a month and a half earlier, he put up 34 points.
Yeah.
So it was the same guys. I mean, all right, I shouldn't say that. Let me stand corrected. He had Gronk, so that's a bad analogy. Yeah. I'll back right off of that. He had Gronk when he played Denver in the regular season.
And you know, a lot of times, second time around, we talk about Belichick getting better.
Well, that's the only difference.
And I think Denver probably had
Belichick knows what he's doing.
And I think maybe Denver had a pretty, you know, now that you knew who could do what and Gronk not being there, I think Denver's defense had the number.
And, you know, Tlaib going out and the secondary not being able to cover a bit with a blanket.
That's our defense.
But just overall. That had an impact on the game.
It did.
Gronk renders that. That was a useless analogy.
A lot of times if you're, you know, McDaniels or Belichick, and you see your best defensive guy out, you panic a little on offense. You might call different plays than you would have normally. Get a little bit less patient, you know? So it's just such a – there is no definitive –
Exactly,
statement,
and that's why I can't believe that this has taken on as much attention as it has. It's strictly a subjective thing.
Right.
You know, Eric is looking at it and seeing something, and you're looking at it and seeing something else. But that's the nature of the beast. When we evaluate a guy's performance and you try not to just use data, statistical data, it's totally subjective.
And let me just say this for the record for the 85,000th time. It's a slight decline year to year. Slight, minimal, incremental. He is still one of the best ever and currently.
But the only reason it's worth talking about, if it's worth talking about, is if that decline made a difference.
It does make a difference.
Well, I think it makes
I don't think it
especially
did.
Especially in the playoffs.
You know, I think
it may not make a
I think
not
I
much
think
of a difference in the regular season
of the offense was the reason.
I think that's the biggest factor. Yes, you know, but I don't think he played as well. And I think the reason he didn't play as well is because he's not as good as he used to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think 2000 Tom Brady would have done any better with that offense.
2000
than
Tom Brady?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, 2007 Tom Brady would have done
yes,
any better with that offense
I think he
than
would have.
2013
I
Tom Brady.
I disagree, Fred. He would have done better.
He would have had the same fits. He would have still been pissed off at people. You know,
he wouldn't have missed Julian Edelman streaking across the middle of the field.
He was throwing the ball better.
Yards.
He was in better health.
I'll bet
physically.
You if I go to 2007, I can find him missing an open guy.
I didn't say you couldn't find him missing an open guy, but
not
it happened
as
more
as
often.
Again. And it was just, you know.
It's not about them being on the same page. Yeah. A guy gets wide open, he's wide open.
The
if
problem
make
is
the throw,
if Tom Brady makes
fault,
a mistake in
fault.
A game, that's the game. You know. For that offense.
That's the way it's always been.
No, it hasn't always been that.
Since like 04.
You know, it hasn't always been that way. You know?
You can't have it both ways. He can't be the reason you win, but not the reason you lose. You can't have it both ways.
Well, I would say in 2003, 04, I don't think he was always the reason they won.
Well, then why is he considered the greatest of all time, in your opinion? If he wasn't the reason they won, I tell you a lot of quarterbacks that were the reason their teams won.
Yeah.
So if you don't think he was the reason they won, why do you think he's the best?
I think you can still be great and not always be the reason why your team wins every game. you can see. In 07, why did they win the Super Bowl?
You know what I hate? When I'm in a situation of arguing things, that I think Brady is one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time.
No,
I don't
we
like
keep
being,
saying it.
I don't like being involved in arguments that I have to say, you know, where he has shortcomings. But I just find it's a little bit talking out of both sides of your mouth when you say he wasn't the reason they won, but he's the greatest quarterback of all time.
Well, I mean
either he was the reason they won and he was instrumental to put him up in the pantheon with the great of the greatest of the greats, or he wasn't.
Yeah.
I think that
to me, he was.
I think
was the reason they won. I don't think just any schmo could have gone in there and won 3 Super Bowls in 4 years.
No, absolutely
now,
not.
Can I take a quick time out? Because one of the guys that I covered on those Patriots teams that I hated more than any other, Willie McGinnis. Right?
Yeah.
He went up a million notches in my book. He's now my boy, Willie. I'm fully on board with you, Willie. Love you, buddy. NFL Network. You know how they've been doing the decades? Well, they got to the 2000s. So they were talking a lot about, you know, the Patriots obviously have dominated it. And they asked him about Bledsoe and the transition to Brady. And he was saying how great Brady was and how it did. And then he said, you know, do you ever think, you know, what would have happened had we not, you know, had he not got hurt? He goes, we might have won more. We might have won 2 or 3 more. And the guy was like, so you think you would have won the title? He goes, nah. He goes, maybe they would have won 2 each. Maybe Drew would have won 2 and Brady would have won 2 more. You know, who knows? They might have won. And I was like, I love you, man. Willie McGinnis, that's the only guy I ever heard say that. Even I don't believe that, but that's okay.
But, you know, I think that Rodgers is a great quarterback. You know, Elway was great. They didn't win it every year.
No.
They were still among the greatest.
You can't win it every year.
You can't. No. You just can't. And I think last year.
And that's what Eric is talking about. We all think that Brady is the greatest of the great. So let's not turn this into something that it's not. Just because we think he's approaching his late 30s and losing a little something on his fastball. It's not. We're not saying that somehow devalues his career. So it's. And I know we had a good week here. It's been slow, and we've glommed on to this. But Eric and I are in agreement, but we're not. That doesn't mean that we're saying that Brady's not as great as you think he is. We think he's every bit as great as you think he is, Fred.
That's right.
Let's put it that way.
Of course you do. Let's go to Dave in Connecticut on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Dave.
Hey, guys. How are we doing today? Start off with a happy 4th of July. You guys have a good cookout. Secondly, you know, I think when you guys mentioned it, you know, I can remember specifically watching games where Brady was a little banged up. I mean, and they were telestrating his hand, how swollen his hands were. What was going on with his hands, you know, half the season? He looked like he was wearing Mickey Mouse gloves. They were so swollen.
Well, his hands are in decline.
I'm sure that affected his throwing. I'm sure the offensive, you know, I don't know if you can say Brady himself would come out and probably say it wasn't his best year he's ever had. Okay? I think a lot of things led to that. I think the rookies led to it. You know, I think the offensive line didn't play as well as it has in the past. Didn't give the time to throw the ball at times. And yes, he did miss some wide open receivers. Okay? And yes, he was, you know, but he was out there and he was slinging it. And we still were one game away from the Super, you know, going to the Super Bowl. So, you know, once again, who would I rather have? Nobody. But Tom Brady has my quarterback. And when that day comes, it's going to be a sad day. It really is.
Yep.
For me. You know? And it's going to be a day to reflect on what he's done for this organization. And just to jump on the tight end situation, guys, do you think maybe they might be waiting to see what kind of tight ends get cut, you know, or released, you know, training camp-wise?
Instead of just signing Keller now, you mean?
Instead of signing Keller now?
Oh, yeah. Jermichael Finley?
They might have their eyes on.
That's a good question. We'll take that. Thanks for the call, Dave. Do you think that the Patriots might be waiting, thinking that there might be a tight end cut? You know, I don't think so. I really don't.
I don't think they're relying on other teams.
Yeah, you know, thinking about, like, okay, if Keller comes back at 80% of what he was, or, you know, fully back, is there a guy that could potentially be cut that would be as good as that? I don't think so. I don't think teams are cutting, you know, guys who can catch balls at the tight end position. I think it's shown its worth in the NFL these days. It's become one of the most valuable positions on offense, you know, because they can be on the field all, you know, four downs. You know, so I don't think that anyone's going to come free that will help the Patriots significantly that you wait.
I don't think so.
You know, I don't know. I could be wrong. I mean, guys do become available, but that would be surprising if a tight end that could help the Patriots became available.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, you could get, you know, some backup guy.
Yeah.
Or a guy who's past his prime, you know, a Kellen Winslow type from a couple years ago, Vasante Shenko. You might be able to get a name, but not necessarily a player.
Right. Alex from Philly, random thought, are we too Gronk-centric? We rely on him to not only make plays, but pretty much get everyone else open too. And if he's not there again, or if he's less than what he was, we are practically the walking dead offensively without him. Just thinking, if we have another guy capable of making plays without Gronk's help, maybe losing him to an injury wouldn't be such an offense-killing drop-off. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think there's some truth to that. I think it just gets down to what we're talking about. I personally don't think the receiving core, the wide receivers, are good enough. I think they need to have better players. Now, it's okay that Gronk is the centerpiece of your offense, even with his injury past and whatnot. And it's okay that he makes things easier for the other guys. That's what your best players do. You know, Brady makes things easier for the running backs, right? But I think you need to have somebody better than Julian Edelman as your top wide receiver, in my opinion.
All right.
How do you feel about it?
I do.
I know you were reading emails.
No,
there,
I do. I mean, we've been talking about it for a while. You know, they don't have that true number one guy.
And they haven't really gone out and tried to get that. You know, they went the young route last year. They haven't really gone out really and acquired a name since, what, 2011,
yeah,
when they did Ocho, and that didn't work out.
The loss of Hernandez and Gronk last year set them reeling. I mean, they had a type of
Brandon Lloyd, I guess, the next year.
Yeah,
would
I mean, they had the type of
either.
They had a tight end centric offense that blew up in their face, and they were reeling last year, and they still haven't really, you know, come back from that.
Right, and I remember last year at this time, a lot of people were saying, well, it's not fair that we're criticizing because they didn't know this was going to happen with Hernandez. And they certainly had no indication that Gronk was going to linger with all these infections. Well, now you've had a whole year to know that you didn't have Hernandez and to know that Gronk is a much bigger injury question mark now than he was last year, despite the fact that he was such a question with the infections. And yet they've still done nothing. Brandon LaFell. That's
right,
it.
Right. Yeah. Let's see. Eric writes in, and he's from Houston. I have a hypothetical question regarding the Patriots' 2014 record that I'd like to ask Paul. Even though Andy is my favorite on the show, I respect Paul's opinion the most. So the question is, Let's say Gronk has a season like Welker's 2009 season, and he plays the whole season but at only about 80%, and Revis turns back into the old Revis and is great. Also, Brady stays healthy, and there aren't many significant injuries. Would it be realistic for the Patriots to go 14-2? I know it's a hypothetical, but I would really like to hear Paul's opinion. One last thing, Eric, I really enjoy when you do your Herm Edwards impression. It cracks me up every time. Keep up the great work you guys do, keeping us entertained during the offseason, and as always, F the Jets.
So, did you have a lot now?
Everybody healthy except Gronk.
Hold
he's
on
at,
now.
He's at about 80%. Do they go 14-2? Can they?
Yes.
Yes, of course they can.
They can go 14-2. I would probably put it a game or two less than that, but I will say this. I don't really care what the record is. They are a legitimate Super Bowl threat.
Herm, what do you think? Can they go 14-2?
Yes, I would say yes.
No.
I don't know now.
Now, hold on now. Hold on now.
Herm's pretty good now.
All right.
Great analysis, Herm. Thank you.
Mm.
I have my Argyle socks now.
Mike from Rancho Cucamonga, California. I think the Patriots should go to a high-speed, up-tempo offense again, having smaller, quicker players to fit that role, like Jeremy Gallen, Shane Vereen, and Roy Finch. Having much more of a dominant roles in bigger players like Randall LaFell or Stephen Ridley, what do you think?
We're checking out pictures
of
Eugenie Bouchard.
Is okay.
I'm looking them up.
She's okay.
Eric's getting creepy
on the internet.
I
wonder if they had the headshots mixed up, maybe?
No,
kind of looks like the Kvitova headshot.
I'll get you the Kvitova headshot here in a sec. Hold on.
I think that the no-huddle, hurry-up,
I think
whatever,
women's tennis players should play with no
nude.
Panties.
Nude. Yeah,
just no panties.
Just nude. I mean,
so you get quick glimpses. I mean, how big would ratings be?
I don't know. How small are our ratings going to be after someone hears what we just said?
Not the ratings you're worried about getting big.
Oh.
I think the hurry-up, no-huddle stuff is always going to be a big part of this. I think Josh McDaniels likes it. I think Bill Belichick likes it. I don't think it has anything to do with having a bunch of small guys out there.
Yeah, you know what, Paulie? I think they put a really good image of Kvitova up there and a really bad image of Bouchard.
Yeah. Because Kvitova was borderline smoke in that headshot, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
I think they had him backwards.
Yeah.
I think that Bouchard was the one that I thought was hot. But they had the name under the wrong pitcher. Wow.
Anyway.
But do you – I mean, I don't feel like you – first of all, Jeremy Gallen is a long shot to make the roster,
right,
in my opinion.
Right.
Not a bubble. He's a long shot.
Yep.
And I know I'm in the minority on
he
that.
Could end up on the
practice squad.
Could end up on the practice squad.
Sure. But he's 5'8", and they have how many other guys that are below 6 feet already?
Right.
They're all going to get cut so he can have a role? Maybe he's that good, but you know, I doubt it. And, I don't think you need to have a bunch of slot type receivers on the field to run the no huddle. You can have bigger guys too. And Gronk is, you're going to take Gronk off the field because you go in no huddle?
Hell right. No. And no huddle, if you do it too much, up tempo, no huddle can really burn you.
And I think that when you have situations like last year where your offense was very sporadic, it was very inconsistent. There were times the offense looked good last year, but there were also long stretches where, you know, remember those games they went 1-for-12 on third down. Well, if you're not converting on third down,
right,
and you're in the no huddle.
Right, your defense is getting worn out.
It's not helping you very much.
Sam in San Diego, first of all, let me add to the choruses of thank yous from the
fans.
San
Diego.
Yeah, now that I live in the West Coast, it's a good start to my morning to listen to you guys. Did you guys catch the Top 100 Players show last night? People are apparently up in arms about Aaron Rodgers ranking the fourth best quarterback below Brady, Breeze, and Manning. I think he means above.
Fourth best.
Oh, I see. Below them. So Brady, Breeze, and Manning are ranked higher than Rodgers. Although he is great when he's on the field, I believe that if you miss half the season, a drop in ranking isn't surprising. Manning dropped a whole 48 or so ranking when he missed the entire season. What do you guys think about that? And, oh, by the way, I live about 2 minutes from Qualcomm Stadium, so I might see you guys in December.
Okay.
I don't care.
I don't care about their ratings.
I hate the premise. I hate the show. However, if you're going to do it, I would agree with the people that are up in arms about Aaron Rodgers Aaron Rodgers is better than those guys. He is. And he didn't miss an entire season like Peyton Manning. He missed like 3 or 4 games.
Yeah.
And when he played at a high level. with not a great team. That Green Bay is not the great team that people think it is.
It isn't.
Like they used to be.
Right.
I mean,
what makes them great? Their quarterback.
Right. It's just like the Patriots.
Exactly.
Dan in San Antonio, love the show, longtime listener.
Dan Antonio.
My question is, would you guys ever consider doing the show live on video feed? It seems like us fans miss out on the overall atmosphere of the show, emotions, outbursts, and fun. We've had quite a few people ask that. I don't know. Do you think it would be that much better if we had video, you know, live simulcast?
I think we always say this, and I think people would be very bored.
Yeah. I think at
we
first
we wouldn't have any production value.
Right.
Well, it'd be like Imus in the morning.
Right.
Like they just have a camera that's on the radio show.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to be bored by radio on television in the first place. But if you're going to do it, at least you'd need some production value.
Yeah.
Even Felger and Maz, they have graphics they'll put up.
Right.
Still shots of things they're talking about. They might have some highlight that they're talking about. ESPN, Mike and Mike, I think, is simulcast the same way.
Yeah.
It would just be a still shot of us talking.
Well, you might have it to right. We have two cameras. They'd switch back and forth from the camera.
Yeah,
we'd have no graphics. We'd have no stats to talk about what we're discussing. We'd have no video, nothing to illustrate what's going on. It would just be, a bunch of fat guys, two fat guys and Eric, stuffing their faces at lunch.
Right.
And then a big head making fun of everybody and everything.
I think the novelty would wear off real quick. It wouldn't be worth the effort. So.
Unless we had a generous sponsor that was paying for it all.
That said, I'm all for it. If people really wanted to see it, it's not like any of us are too vain to do it. I mean, do it. I just don't think you guys would enjoy it.
No, like you said, we'd have to get people and KSP to produce the thing.
I mean, the cameras are already in the studio, so that's...
It's not like you need television production.
No, but nowadays, I think the line between web and TV is not what it used to be. You do have to have it look good.
No, forget that because we ain't gonna look good.
No, but I think from a production value, like you said, you got to put the graphics in. You got to, if you're gonna be on TV, get visual.
Right.
We're talking
about Eugenie Bouchard. We need pictures of Eugenie Bouchard.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, we got to have a crack, and especially the way we do our show, which is stream of consciousness.
Your best contribution. You
got to have a producer keep up with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was your best contribution to the show, as you introduced me to a hottie.
Oh, yeah?
I might have to watch Wimbledon tomorrow. It's supposed to rain all day, right? They play tomorrow?
Yeah.
No, Saturday. Finals are Saturday for the women.
Men's semis tomorrow.
Yeah.
You got the World Cup tomorrow, Paul.
Crush it. Well, yeah. I know.
Speaking of the World Cup, Adam writes in from from Dublin. Just want to drop you guys a line about the epic efforts of your national team in the World Cup. I know it's the dog days of the NFL, as Fred calls them, so I hope you'll allow this slight deviation. First off, being Irish, our team has got to the World Cup only 3 times. We're the perpetual underdogs, and it's always ended in heartbreak, but we have always gone out fighting, playing with courage, and playing as a team. With no Irish involvement in this World Cup, I turn my support to the U.S., as I do in most tournaments, because I always want to see what effect success will or could have on the popularity of the game in the U.S. You might not have the most talented team, but more so than any other team I've watched so far, you have a group of guys who play together and for each other as a team. I was devastated at the end of the Belgium game for you guys because on another day, you could have been beaten 3-0 or won it at the end of normal time.
They should have won it at the end of normal time.
The fight back in extra time that almost brought it to a penalty shootout was astonishing.
It was.
A lot of sides would have thrown in the towel.
Yeah.
But my point is that although I think America will now embrace the World Cup every 4 years rather than become a soccer bad nation, the truth in how much you care can be found in not how happy you are when the team wins, but how much it hurts when you lose. Whether you like the game or not.
It's a Ted Sarandis round of applause for that guy.
Whether you like the game or not, and you don't have to be forced to like it like Dennis Callahan and Minahan suggest, I hope you'll be more keen to appreciate your team at every future World Cup. Everyone around the rest of the world has been hugely impressed of the honesty, the guts, the integrity, the team spirit, and the lesson that a team can always be more than the sum of its part, as shown by the U.S. I hope that's appreciated back in America. Finally, being Irish, I know how patronizing it can be to hear others tell how brave and courageous you are in defeat, but I honestly believe U.S. soccer is going to be much more respected as a result of their efforts in this World Cup.
I hope you're right.
Except,
Adam,
isn't this the same place they got to in the last two World
they've
Cups?
Gotten, yes. They've gotten to this point. This is the farthest they've ever gotten. They haven't gotten into the round.
Here's what I think America needs
to do. The quarterfinals.
Matter of fact, they lost in extra time the last time in
to Ghana.
In the round of 16.
Here's what they need to do, America, if they truly want to get this thing and build on the momentum. It's not about promoting the sport of soccer. It's about promoting the players that are playing. And what I'm saying is identify these young kids and start marketing the crap out of them now. You've got... in 2 years, you've got like a...
like the green kid who scored in the...
but there's some young kids. I don't even know their names, but I hear there's some young kids coming up. In 2 years, you got another big tournament, an America's tournament that's, you know, both...
Yeah, you can't just get excited every 4 years.
No.
They have the
don't
cups,
market,
they have the
forget about
friendlies.
Marketing the sport of soccer. We all know what soccer is. Who are the players?
Mm.
Get me excited in the individuals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm thinking back to the American sports, you know. I can look at hockey back in the day, and I can, even though I wasn't a fan, Gordie Howe, Bobby Hull, Maurice Richard, Rocket Richard, Bobby Orr. I know those names. Baseball, obviously, Babe Ruth, Mickey, you know, all those guys, Ty Cobb. I know names. I don't know names of soccer players. I know Pele, but he didn't play for America, you know? Introduce us to who these players are, market them. What are they like off the field? You know, if they're good looking, you know, get the girls excited. I'm serious. You know, market the players and not the sport.
Mm-hmm.
We know what soccer is. Get us excited in who's playing.
Right, because like Beckham's a great example of that.
Right.
I mean, he was a great player.
Right.
No doubt about that. But he also marketed himself, and he got help marketing himself.
You know,
for years, and people wanted to watch Beckham play. Like when he came to MLS, that was the big thing. You wanted to see the Galaxy because you wanted to see Beckham play.
Right. You know, think of basketball. I mean, basketball didn't take off until there were stars.
Bird and Magic.
You know, they were playing basketball well before, you know, in the 50s. And,
right.
You know, but.
Bird and Magic took the NBA to where,
well,
it took it global.
It took it global.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And people started getting excited about it around
right.
the world. They started playing.
And then the Dream Team.
Yeah.
That helped too.
Start marketing these players. And it's not MLS because the players aren't there.
Right.
You know, our goalie, Tim Howard, is going to go play in Germany, right?
He plays for Everton.
He's in the
Everton. Okay.
I'm
sorry.
Premier
Everton.
League, right?
Yeah.
So our
Britain.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
That's not the Premier League?
Yeah.
No?
The Premier League in Great Britain.
You know, chances are, if we do get great players like Clint Dempsey, who, you know, now he's back in Seattle,
but he went over there.
Yeah.
That's how they're going to get better. They're not going to get better playing in the MLS. So don't freak out when they go and play in a European league. Follow them. Mm. You know, the FIFA or not FIFA, U.S. soccer needs to have a huge marketing campaign to follow these guys wherever they are.
Yeah, I mean,
stream it on the internet if you have to. These kids know how to use that.
You make a good point there, Fred, because the best leagues in the world are the English Premier League, La Liga in Spain,
Serie A
in Italy. Most of the
Bundesliga.
Best the Bundesliga in Germany, right? But the best players in the world. The best players in the world for. Like, look. Let's just look at the teams that are in the finals now: Costa Rica, the Netherlands, Argentina, Belgium. Those players the stars on those teams aren't playing in their own countries.
No,
they're
Belgium
playing
has 11 guys that play
in the other countries'
the
leagues.
League.
Right. So
right.
Don't be upset when an American player goes overseas to play.
Give us a means to follow them.
As long as they come back
them.
And play for country.
Right.
Exactly.
That's all you
give
care
us
about.
A means to follow them.
Right.
So that's the key, I think, is promote the players, not the sport. You know.
Well, I agree with you about the stop trying to, you know, market the sport. Here, I mean, I think people have sort of. I mean, and I understand
people have accepted
that,
it, right? Kids play soccer. It's soccer moms is a term that came from the United States.
And I understand that, you know, there's always the younger generation that you're trying to get. And you continue that the grassroots stuff and all that. That's fine. You can continue that. Just like every other sport has to fight to keep it going. I mean, football right now is in a crisis because of the whole head injuries thing. So they have to continue the grassroots stuff, just like soccer does. And you could be at two opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of popularity in this country. But stop worrying so much about what the people don't like, which seems to be, I think, a plague solely for soccer. Soccer fanatics seem to have a problem with anyone who doesn't care about their game.
And I agree with that, but I also think people, on the other side, you have these people that, you know, stop forcing it, throwing it down my throat.
Yeah.
I don't think really.
So stop. Agree with you. Stop doing that.
Right.
And just let people, you couldn't find anybody, and you guys know, you guys make fun of me all the time, who's less interested in the game than I am. I found myself listening on the radio to a soccer match the other day driving home. I'm listening to the end of the second half into the extra time, and I got home and watched the last 15 minutes. And my son was on the edge of his seat. We were so excited when they scored, and I kept telling him they were going to score again, even though I was thinking, this game is over.
They almost did a couple of times.
And they almost did, and I kept telling them, you don't quit. You don't quit.
Right.
And they didn't, just like the emailer said. But I agree with your point about don't worry about the state of the sport.
Right.
Just try to promote your team, and let's try to get better the next time.
Mm-hmm.
And just try to keep on building on the successes that you have. I think that everything involving the sport seems to be a referendum on the sport. You know, where's it going to be in 4 years?
Right.
I've been hearing this stuff for 30 years. When I was in elementary school, everybody told me that forget about the foot and the inch in the yard. It's going to be the metric system. This is what we're going to do.
Right.
This is what's going to the whole world is using it, and this is what we're going to do. We were one of three countries at the time that didn't use the metric system. The USA, Yemen, and Burma. Those were the three countries that didn't use the metric system, according to my fifth-grade science teacher,
right.
Mr. Platy.
And you remember that,
okay?
It was ingrained in your head.
Because they beat me over the head with it. You've got to learn
this. Oh, yeah, same thing.
You have to learn this.
Yeah.
Schoolhouse Rock, you know, the whole thing about the
metric system. The nuns would say, see this ruler that I'm hitting you with? Yes. It's going to be in metric in 20 years.
Centimeters.
I was 11. I'm 46 now. I'm still using inches, feet, and yards.
Right.
Okay? So
stop
telling me what soccer is going to be.
He's a pint-sized gallon.
Because at the same time, they were telling me, because what was happening then, Fred? When I'm in the fifth grade, we're talking late 70s, 77 maybe, 78.
Right.
What was going on?
I don't know.
NASL, New York Cosmos.
Yeah. Well,
70,000 people at the Meadowlands to watch
Pele and the Cosmos, Franz Beckenbauer.
Right. And Kinyalia, whatever
Giorgio Kinyalia.
All right.
From Italy.
That was huge. That was a huge, huge phenomenon for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what's going to happen. This is what's going to sweep the...
Right.
Okay. Here we are, 40 years later, 35 years later.
Yep.
It's not any bigger now than it was then.
Yep.
It's not. So stop worrying about that. Stop telling us what it's going to be, and just get that national team as strong as you can possibly make it. I think Klinsmann was a great move in that.
Oh, absolutely.
That's a guy who understands what it takes to win at that level.
And, you know, it's funny because when a few years back, there was this push to promote NFL in China.
Mm.
And everybody, all the suits, there was a consensus that, you know, the fastest way we can get people in China interested in NFL football is if we have people from China playing in our league. So all of a sudden there was this big scramble. Who can we find from China that we can put on a team? And I think they brought in a kicker to play on one team. But they understand that it's about the players. My son and his friends know the players in soccer from around the world from playing FIFA on video. But the point is they know their names. They know who these guys are. So when they see an EPL game, they know who to follow. They know the background of the players. That's what it's all about.
That's when you could take it to the next
step.
That's
why I love the Jets, because I love Joe Namath.
What Eric is talking about, now you get, you know, whoever the name happens to be. And I don't know all the names and the guys in the U.S. team. But the kid Jones that scored the goal late?
Green.
Okay. He's going to go back over and play somewhere. Well, maybe you could get some people that liked him and said, wow, that kid's really athletic. He's just a young kid, scored that huge goal. Now I'm going to follow the team that he goes and plays for, wherever it is, whatever league in Europe that he plays for.
And Felger had a great idea, I think. I don't know if it's practical, but he said, forget about the MLS. There should be a team from the United States that plays in EPL. Or plays in one of these leagues, just like the NFL was thinking about, about having a team in Europe that plays in the NFL. That's the way to get it going. These guys in the MLS are never going to get any good enough to be. You have to play against good competition to get better. And we should promote. We should not be saying, "Oh, let's promote. Let's develop these guys so they play in the MLS. Let's develop these guys so they can play in the world stage."
Yeah, You're right.
You also have to pay these guys.
Right.
And I'm not talking about MLS.
But they need a
financial incentive.
Saudis are loving – they're looking for ways to invest in the United States. What better way than to own a soccer team?
But if you – I think that's a great idea.
It doesn't have to be American-owned.
But your EPL
– they're from America.
Right. Your EPL idea was a great idea. I know you got – Felger said it. But but even if you there's a lot of talk about the college game is not really a very good training ground. You know, in Europe, these kids are like 13, 14 years old, and they have this talent, and they're getting put in these camps.
Yeah. Right.
And they're training, and that's what they do. They train against the national team. So they're training against the best of the very best, and by the time they're 17, 18, 19, they're in a position where they're starting to get spots on those teams. Give some sort of financial incentive for a kid to say, gee, that's really hard for me. Like, what if I don't make – I mean, there's no money in soccer for an American. I mean,
no.
Very, very scant.
Not here.
No, Dempsey
not
makes
here.
$6 million, right. But he's an exception.
Yeah, a very, very scant
right,
few.
Right.
I mean, the best of the best. Landon Donovan, you know, certainly. You know, those guys went over and they made – Michael Bradley. You know, they were in Europe and they made money. But most of them don't. So to ask them to pass up – I mean, let's face it. A lot of these kids come from affluent backgrounds.
Yeah.
They're not going to pass up that college education.
Right.
Because that's probably what they're going to end up doing for life. Is whatever they go to college to learn. So in order to give them incentive to pass that up, you got to pay them.
Yeah.
Right.
So get them in these camps at some age. Identify the talent and get them some kind of – get more Klinsmans over here, European coaches that know how to coach at a level that we don't.
And it should be a combination of U.S. soccer funds, but also I think FIFA can make the point to, you know, everybody, the world, say, look, we need to, as a governing body, invest in the United States, because if we can get the U.S. up to the level, I mean, that's good for the whole sport. So we're going to invest in some camps or incentives for kids to do what Paul's saying. I think FIFA should, just the way the NFL, you know, helped out teams to build stadiums back in the day, they had the initiative. I think FIFA should do the same thing in the United States. And I know, you know, other countries would be like, oh, what about us? But look, if we can get the United States going, it's going to help all of us.
Yeah.
You know?
And two more points. The Klinsmann thing is huge, because for the longest time, you look at some of the great teams, like Brazil's coach, Scolari, has been around for a long time. Some of the best teams had stability, like with the, just like any sport, like the Patriots, have had Belichick, Kraft, Brady for a long time. And big surprise, they've been successful. They had a good coach, good owner, good player in place. They were successful. Klinsmann is the best coach I think they've ever had in U.S. soccer. And if he can stick around for several more World Cups, that's going to help.
They really believe that he's the future.
I believe so, too. Yeah. I mean, he was.
I mean, despite what Landon Donovan said today about him, you know.
I missed that.
He railed on him a little bit, said he didn't put them in the position to win.
Well, but also because
after keeping his mouth shut all that time,
He's a little bitter that he didn't get on this World Cup team.
Oh,
so
no,
that's
what I'm saying is he
kept his mouth shut throughout the time. Right.
He played the classy role throughout the whole process.
He couldn't be Bledsoe through and through.
Right.
At least Bledsoe only did it to Borges behind his back.
I had 2 points. That was one. Klinsmann thing, I think, is really huge. Second one. Lionel Messi, some of the best, he's the best, considered the best player in the world from Argentina. A lot of the best players in the world are from Argentina. They're not playing in Argentina.
Right.
They're not playing for leagues in Argentina.
No.
And they don't want to play for leagues in Argentina. So that's just to stress the point of, don't worry about if the MLS doesn't become a premier league in the whole world. You can still have great players from the country who don't play here.
My challenge to U.S. soccer is this. If in 2 years, I don't know the name of every player on the U.S. national team and where they are and where they're from, then they failed. That's their mission. I'm giving them a job to inform the public of who the national team is in 2 years. Start now. Who are the potential guys that could be on the team? Tell me why. Tell me if they're better. You know,
I'll tell you one thing you're going to have to do is you're probably going to have to find a goalie.
Yeah,
probably.
Yeah.
39 at the next World Cup.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but they're a dime. They're like running backs, Paul.
Not for that team. They're like running backs for everybody else.
Yeah.
Not when you have to make 20 saves.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition of PFW in Progress. We thank everyone for listening. We ended the show talking about football.
Football.
But we will be back next Tuesday with another edition.
You will be back next Tuesday.
We're on vacation.
Yeah, I'll have a guest. We'll see you next Tuesday.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.